As the elders explain it, every story begins and ends at the crossing of two paths. So for some, this story begins on the shores of France. Two men, once enemies, whose paths first crossed in battle, now face different roads in their journey as friends.
Tariq. Things won't be the same without you. What will I do with myself? When you're not praying five times a day.
Do exactly the same thing you would do when I was praying.
Well, it's impossible.
Why?
Because I'm stealing your food. Come with me to England.
Come with me to Spain. We'll find El Kabil together. We'll continue our adventures.
I can't. The only adventure I seek at the moment are two-headed cattle and an acre of farmland.
Always the hopeless romantic.
They separate.
Hey.
The knight walks back. His Muslim friend flicks him on the forehead.
I hate it when you do that!
Others say it began the same day with the escape of Father Bernard.
I was going to tie your feet together, but I want to see you kick.
The monk kicks his executioner in the crutch and escapes the gallows.
A shepherd, on the run from his flock.
He flees in a horse-drawn cart that crashes. A man in the stocks watches him land heavily. Now the monk is off again, racing away on a makeshift skateboard.
But most say it began right here in England, with the disappearance of Princess Luna on the eve of her wedding.
Princess Luna stands on the edge of a vast lake of shimmering water, flanked by steep banks of trees and greenery. A mountain rises up to the sky in the distance. The princess, in a long white dress, steps barefooted into the water. A sweeping aerial view of the lakeside forest reveals a small encampment of two tents close by. The princess slowly steps further into the lake until the water touches her long golden hair that hangs down to her waist. A giant shadow falls on the water. A mighty dragon with vast webbed wings lands on the shingle beach. The creature with a brown body armor of jagged scales fixes its green eyes on the princess and trudges into the water. Princess Luna turns in alarm as the dragon approaches her. She stares up at the monster open-mouthed. British Sky Broadcasting presents George and the Dragon, starring James Purefoy, Piper Perabo, Patrick Swayze, Michael Clark Duncan, Bill Treacher, and Jean-Pierre Castaldi. The monk on the skateboard continues his crazy journey along a narrow street. He leaps onto tables displaying wares that block his way, and then back onto the skateboard again, heading towards a line of washing. Also starring Rollo Weeks, Phil McKee, and Caroline Carver. The skateboarding monk is pursued by an angry crowd. The monk flies over stone steps. The skateboard lands in a water trough. He does a double flip and lands on his feet. The director is Tom Reeve. The monk abandons the skateboard to an eager young lad and runs through a door in the city walls. The audio description is by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS agency. Now the monk, Father Bernard, dashes along a beach towards the knight and his Muslim friend. The knight, George, wearing a tabard over his chainmail, is having a pee behind his horse.
Come here, you really need to see this.
George and the Muslim, Tariq, wearing a kaftan, stare at the frantic monk fleeing his pursuers.
Maybe the old rope trick.
The old rope trick.
George and Tariq ride their horses towards the monk. They each hold one end of a rope. Father Bernard dives to the sand to avoid the rope, but it brings down his pursuers. They know when they're beaten and run off. The monk gets to his feet and addresses the two horsemen who saved him.
Praise God, my son. You saved my... You're more.
Yes, I am.
The monk eyes the big black Muslim with suspicion.
So Tariq headed off to Spain in search of adventure and the legendary mercenary, El Kabil, whilst George rode home to England.
George rows the little boat while Father Bernard takes a little drink.
The word of God warms the soul, but good wine warms the belly.
He offers George the flask.
I have to ask you about...
How did a Christian knight befriend a Muslim Moor?
Mm-hmm.
That's quite simple, really. I tried to cut my head off. I was in Jerusalem, in the ruins of a small building. There were two Arab men. One was dead, the other was mortally wounded. I was kneeling over the man when Tariq came into the building.
And why didn't he kill you?
Well, because he realized I wasn't trying to kill the man. I was giving him water to ease his suffering. The man was Tariq's own brother.
So, what are your plans now?
Hopefully find a quiet place to settle down. Perhaps find a wife.
Oh.
But first, I have family to visit.
Here in the forest, men search for the missing princess. None more so than Lord de Gurney, but he had much to lose. The king had given him the princess's hand, and once wed, he would have the power and riches he coveted. Whether the princess loved him or not, he would marry her and rule the kingdom. But no one thought Dragon. They had long since become legend. But looking back, this story really began when George returned to the village of Lore, and our paths crossed for the first time.
Are you lost, sir? And where's your horse?
No, I'm not lost, and I have no horse. I'm here to find Sir Robert. He'd be old now.
He's still here, and he's still old. I'm Rin.
George. Very pleased to meet you, Rin. Sir Robert?
Oh, I'll take you to him.
Thank you, kind sir.
The young boy Rin, dressed in sheepskin, leads George, who carries his shield and sword.
Oh, you be careful with that lance, boy.
George is led to a shack where candles light the gloom.
Hello? Is there anybody home?
My eyes may be weak. Even after 15 years, I know the voice of my own son. Come here, my boy.
George and Sir Robert hug.
I never gave up hope. I knew you'd come back. George, so often I dreamt I was there fighting alongside of you.
Sir Robert, may we come in?
Yes, come in. My son, the hero. Prepare a feast.
Elsewhere, Tariq has been captured.
Shall we cook him first? Or eat him on the hoof?
I don't know, Bolkari looks a little tough. Might need a little tenderizing.
So you're the famous El Cabillo. You know, I was hoping you could teach me something.
If you're looking for a teacher, then you made a very poor choice. I only have 4 lessons, and, sadly, my students always seem to fail. Get this man a weapon! This better be worth my while. Lesson number 1. Always expect the unexpected.
And I thought this was going to be easy.
Oh, it's gonna be easy, all right.
Both men are blindfolded as they start their sword fight. The gang leader, El Kabil, removes his blindfold. Surrounded by the other grinning outlaws, he taunts Tariq, who is still blindfolded, and sweeping his sword aimlessly. El Kabil sinks down and hits Tariq in the face with the handle of his sword. Tariq whips off his blindfold.
Lesson number 2. Never take your eyes off your opponent.
Tariq goes on the attack with a vengeance and is getting the better of the other man. A hand pours powder onto a wet flannel.
Lesson number 3. Never underestimate your opponent.
Well, Moore, that's the best you got. Our lessons are almost over.
They break to wipe their faces with the flannels.
Number 4. Always cheat.
El Kabil raises a battle axe.
Best stick with your bow, son.
Is it true that the Muslims eat the heart and liver of the knights they kill?
Doro, you only eat the heart. The liver they feed to the horses.
Never know mine, Rin.
I wish I'd been there with you.
At the village feast, George produces a fork.
What's that?
It's a curious thing, isn't it? It was given to me by a Muslim friend.
A Muslim friend? Surely you jest.
No, actually, Father.
It looks like the devil's pitchfork itself.
Then that's what I shall call it. A pitch.
Where will adventure take you next, my son?
Oh, Father. I want to settle down.
Nonsense! Settle down, Pa! You have two perfectly good legs, my blood running through your veins, the blood of conquest.
Oh, Father, I was thinking of trying to find some land, perhaps north of the Grampians.
Still a hopeless romantic.
It'd be wiser to go east. Fewer brigands.
And no dragons.
No. You're still telling tall stories of dragons, Father, huh?
Not tall stories. Facts. Dragons. Most fearsome creatures who ever walked this earth. And there's still one out there, as you know, by this...
Yes, the lance. The other end of it still stuck fast inside of her, yes?
Aye, and one day, lad, you will bring that half back to me. I think you may finally be ready for this gift. Something I've been saving for you. A dragon horn, made from a claw from its foot.
George accepts the horn, looking doubtful.
Makes a sound only a dragon can hear.
And you saw this dragon, Sir Robert, with your own two eyes?
With my own two legs, to be more precise.
Whatever you say, Father.
Sir Robert reveals his two stumps in place of legs.
I appreciate this gift. My days of conquest are over.
To England!
The gang ride away from their camp, led by Al-Kabil. His helmet covers his face. He wears a black cloak. The helmet of his dead challenger rests on a stone above a grave. Princess Luna sits before a campfire inside a cave. The flickering flames cast an orange glow on the smooth skin of her face. She looks unmoved as the dragon's head peers through the entrance to the cave. She turns to look at a giant dragon's egg nestling behind her. She pulls her fur wrap tightly round her shoulders and prepares to sleep.
Gently, gently. All right, put it down. There we go. Right. Now, when you arrive in Krail, find King Edgar. He's a good man. Edgar will recognize that dragon horn I gave you. You know I sent you.
Will he have some land?
If that's what you seek. But I know better, lad. I know what lies inside you.
Here. Farewell, one.
George.
Goodbye, Father.
George bids farewell to his father and the villagers, mounts his horse and rides into the forest.
Fare you well, all of you. Come.
Deeper in the forest, another knight leads his men along a track blocked by a fallen tree. The knight's horse leaps easily over the obstruction, but the others pull back. One falls off his horse. The knight returns.
If anyone here were half the man I am, we might still have a princess.
George arrives. His horse leaps over the tree without a problem.
Okay, come on, everyone. There's another way round. Come on.
While his men go round the obstruction, the knight gallops onwards. George arrives at a village and rides through the bustling main street where there are thatched cottages and peasants going about their business, mingling in groups around traders selling their wares. There's a fire eater, belching a large orange flame from his mouth. A thatcher on a roof falls through the thatch. George dismounts and enters a tavern where candles burn on wall mountings. A man is tied by the feet upside down over a skittle table and is being swayed to and fro, so his head knocks over the skittles. An evil-looking character with a shaved head is directing the game and clocks George as he enters. George takes a seat in front of a blazing log fire. The jolly-faced bearded landlord brings over a tankard of beer.
Here you are, sir.
See what you think about that.
George samples the ale as the landlord looks on.
Nothing like a drop of ale to wash the dust of the road from your throat.
You're right there, sire. Tell you something too. That is the finest ale this side of the Grampians. Thank you.
Can you tell me where I might find King Edgar?
The king? Ah, well, normally he'd be right over there enjoying a drink.
The king? Here?
Oh, yes. When I say my ale is fit for a king, I mean it.
I was told he may have some land he could sell.
I'm afraid you've had a long journey, and it may have been wasted.
What do you think I am?
You see, the thing is, 3 days ago, the king got word that his daughter disappeared. Not been out of the house since. I doubt he will be till she's found. It's bad business. Very bad business.
Well, I have some time to kill him.
Anyone wanting to buy land round here must have a fair few coins in his purse.
Not as many as you think, friend.
My friends here would all like another tankard of ale. Let's just check those coins again. See if we can.
It's the evil-looking man.
I don't think you want any trouble.
I wouldn't mind, sir.
Be very careful what you wish for, Hard.
Lord Degenny.
I suggest you remember your place.
Batley, my lord! He put me up to it. It was all his big idea.
Go on, get out of here.
Lord de Gurney.
George of Loach.
I can arrange a meeting with the king if you like.
You can?
After you.
Thank you, my lord.
Lord de Gurney, the knight who followed George along the forest track, takes him to the king.
What news, Lord de Gurney?
None yet, sire. But my men and I will continue to search.
Was there no sign of her at all?
No, sire. But I am convinced it was the Picts.
Picts? Those savages. They could do anything to her. Anything at all.
Mark my words, sire. I will get her back unharmed. She is your daughter, but she's also my betrothed.
Then I will join you, for Princess Luna, I'd follow the devil himself.
Sire, I fear it might be a little too dangerous for
any
such
man
a
who joins in the search for my daughter has my blessing.
Perhaps, my liege, I may be of some assistance.
My lord, may I introduce Sir...
My lord, if I may be so bold, this is my introduction.
George hands the horn to the king.
The dragon horn.
The king rushes towards the fire to look in better light.
How did you come by this? Is Sir Robert dead?
Oh, no. No, my good lord. He is old but well. And prays for your good health and long life.
Come here. Come closer.
Those eyes. I'd know those eyes anywhere. You must be...
George. Yes, I am son of Sir Robert.
Well, nothing could delight me more than to know that the son of my old comrade in arms is joining the search. There's a reward, you know. Money is no object.
No, my lord, I seek only one thing. Just a small parcel of land. Enough for a cottage, a garden, 2 head of cattle.
Your modesty touches me. Do you think it's too late?
Sire, I'm sure she's fine. I'll wager there isn't a Pict within a day's ride of her.
Princess Luna emerges from a cave on a rocky slope. She steps onto a plateau of rocks where there is greenery and water. Hitching up her long dress, she plucks seafood from the mossy rocks. She tastes something, but then throws it down. She puts another morsel into her mouth and spits it out distastefully. She corrects her balance after nearly falling into the water. Back in the village...
Must be the horses.
The thatcher falls off his roof.
So we took the better half of a day to get around a tree, did we?
I swear if I had a coin for every time you were late, I could pave this entire country in gold.
I'm sorry, sir. It took a little longer than we thought. There was a
We have no time for chit-chat, Darcy. We have to make camp by daybreak.
Lord Garth de Gurney rides off, followed by George and the guardian of the king's household, Elm. Garth's men, led by Captain Darcy, gallop after them.
Let's see what England has to offer us.
The El Kabid mercenaries ride from a beach, leaving their longboats moored offshore. Elsewhere, Garth rides with George at the head of his men.
Would you care for some licorice?
Thank you.
It must be an acquired taste.
And has the Princess Luna acquired the taste?
I do believe she has.
Then you are destined to be together.
Is there a princess in your life?
No. No, all the women I've come across are more trouble than they're worth.
Then you most certainly have not met my Luna. She is as gentle and agreeable as a lamb.
I shall look forward to making her acquaintance.
George spits out the licorice. Luna walks through the leafy forest, hitching up her long dress with one hand while the other holds wood for her fire. As she gets close to her cave, she sees three Picts ahead of her dressed in their traditional tartan. She glances at the wood she holds and drops it. With her long hair in plaits, she sneaks up behind the Picts and grabs a hefty stick from the ground. She lashes the stick into one of the foes as he tries to draw his sword. Another one comes at her with a battle axe. She ducks as he swipes it at her head and kicks him in the crotch. The third warrior grabs her round the waist. She rears back her head, hitting him in the face. She bites his hand before throwing him to the ground. She tosses away their weapons. Nearby, Garth, with George riding beside him, leads his men to a forward camp of two striped tents. Two soldiers, relaxing round a campfire, quickly get to their feet and stand to attention. They thrust their swords into their sheaths. Garth gets off his horse and turns to George.
I have scoured these woods for tracks, and I have found none.
So, the Picts have wings?
No, they have boats. They came from the water while the princess was in the lake. And they will never suspect we have them too.
We do?
I see nothing but trees.
And from trees come boats. All right, you men dismount. Fell the timber here. You men from here rearward, take your horses and drag the poles to the lake. And you, get me another roll of licorice. Here for another, George?
No. You keep it for yourself, my lord.
George and a soldier start slamming axes into a tree trunk that lies on the ground. Garth thrusts his sword into the soil and pulls the soldier away.
Stand aside.
Yes, my lord.
Shall we?
Garth starts chopping into the wood alongside George. A spear hits the ground.
Appears we may have some company.
A tribe of Picts are running at them through the forest, waving swords and axes. Garth turns to George and laughs. Garth's men stand their ground as the red-haired warriors attack. They're armed with battle axes. Garth fells one and then another. A Pict with war paint on his face tries to spear George, but gets the blunt end of his axe across his stomach.
George, take you.
Garth and George fight together. Captain Darcy brings down a rain of blows on a Pict held by one of his men. George borrows Garth his axe, and they throw it from one to the other. The wild-looking Picts are no match for George, Garth, and the soldiers. A flick on the forehead from George sends a Pict down. The others give up and run.
Elm,
gone looking at trouble. You got for these on your own?
I don't need you, just your axe.
Axe, and you shall receive.
George tosses his axe to Garth and leaps onto his horse to follow Elm, who is already in pursuit of three runaways on his horse, brandishing his sword above his head. The tartan-clad warriors run for all they're worth along a forest track, still holding their swords. Elm looks over his shoulder at George and doesn't see a low-hanging branch until it's too late. He's knocked from his horse. The Picts rush to attack him, but see George galloping up and back off. As George gets from his horse to help Elm, the horse bolts.
No, come back! My sword!
They're left horseless and swordless.
All right, Elm. I surely had them on the run, I did.
No, you nearly got yourself killed, more like it. You're lucky I saw you leave.
Not that lucky, I'm afraid.
He points to a group of Picts rushing down a slope, brandishing weapons. George ushers the elderly Elm away and grabs a spear from one of the attackers. He beats them back before running to Elm, who's halfway up a steep bank. As George tries to pull him up, a Pict grabs Elm's leg. George brandishes his eating fork menacingly, but the Picts laugh at him. Their smiles disappear as well-aimed arrows hit them. One arrow penetrates the stick that Elm holds. George chases the rest of the attackers off.
Come on, get out of here!
Whoever you are, we consider you a friend.
Please show yourself.
George takes hold of Elm's stick with the arrow in it. He studies it.
I know this young archer.
Rin! If you don't show yourself, I'll slice up your liver and have it for dinner.
You wouldn't really eat my liver, would you?
I've half a mind to do exactly that. Now come down here.
Rin jumps from a rock and tumbles over. He rolls for a bit before getting to his feet.
Well, what are you doing here?
Well, you look like you could use some help.
We were in a bit of a bind.
I'm Rin, from Lore.
Elmendorf of Crail. Good to meet you, young Rin. I've heard of Lore, and I've never been there, but I...
Do you mind? Now we have to take this child back to Lore.
You can't take me back. You need me. I saved your life.
Yeah, the boy does have a point.
You've both taken leave of your senses. This journey's far too dangerous to be undertaken by a child.
We can take him as far as the Abbey of St. Germain. Huh? Near Torgau.
Well, you leave us little choice now.
Wonderful. Now let's get back to the camp and we'll retrieve the cart and Princess Luna's things. And then I won't have to ride that infernal horse any longer.
In a different part of the forest, the mercenaries gallop onwards, led by the El Kabil, dressed in black. They rampage into the village, terrifying the locals. A jester is sword-whipped and lands on a stall displaying bread cakes. They chase the women and the girls. One of them has fun throwing rotten tomatoes at a figure in the stocks. Another chases a young boy as he tries to escape over tables and benches where drunks slump outside the tavern. Inside the tavern, a man is trussed up and swinging upside down on a rope as they play a game of human skittles. The jovial landlord is no longer jovial as they pin him down and tie him up.
Your eyes tell me you're lying.
Yeah, well, my mouth's telling the truth. Honestly, we've got nothing.
What?
What? No, 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 please don't hang me upside down. Get nosebleed.
I can smell a lie. Like horses smell water. Do it!
No, 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 brother, look, look, look. Even the king's daughter's disappeared. She's the only valuable thing we have here.
Wait. A princess?
Yeah.
A ransom?
A ransom, yeah. Yeah, great big ransom. Apparently a knight's gone looking for a boy. Would you believe he didn't want the reward? All he wanted was, what was it? A little parcel of land and 2 head of cattle. I mean, come on, what a fool, eh? You'd take the money, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Let's find a princess. Stream up.
What? No, that's not fair! No! Getting a nosebleed, I knew I would. I told him.
The El Kabil gallops along a forest track, followed by one other rider.
George, those Picts weren't so tough after all.
Oh, I'm sure they didn't fare any better against Lord de Gurney either.
Rin and Elm ride on a horse-drawn cart with a horse in tow. George walks with his horse. They all stop as they see a huge pile of dung. George stares curiously. He kicks at it.
What is that? How old is it?
George punches the pile and sticks his hand inside the gunge. He smells it.
10 days.
Yuck!
No, maybe a fortnight. Anything wrong?
No, no. Just thinking we need to move on.
The cart and George, now riding on his horse, journey on beside a river. Just before dusk, they reach a clearing, still by the river.
I stop here.
As darkness falls, the three of them eat fish by a campfire.
Oh, the sky's clearing. You ever see the stars, Sue?
My father once said, if I was worthy enough, they'd name one of those after me.
What's that? Over there.
A blazing torch in the distance.
That's a fire. We should break camp.
George throws water on their campfire. They cautiously approach the flame they saw. George enters a cave, holding up his sword. Rin follows with an arrow loaded in his bow.
Rin, what are you doing? Stay here. Stay here.
Rin steps back to where Elm waits. George goes a little further into the cave. Accidentally, Rin catches Elm's face as he turns with his bow.
Oh, wait. It's useless.
George looks nervous, now with his sword raised. He hears the noise and hides behind a rock, breathing deeply. He peers into the cave's interior. There's a little fire burning beside a huge egg. A vast array of bones lie on the floor of the cave. George slowly approaches the egg. He stretches out his gloved hand to touch it. He shrinks back when he hears a noise that seems to come from the egg. He makes the sign of the cross, blessing himself. He gathers his composure, and with a determined look, he raises his sword to bring it down on the egg. There's blackness.
Try that again, and there's another one where that came from.
He's on the ground, stroking his head. The princess stands above him, holding a large bone.
Get away from that thing!
No, you get away!
Princess Luna! Princess Luna, thank God, you're safe. You've no idea what...
Princess Luna, this is the little lamb we've come to find.
Oh, Elm, I knew you'd come. Subdue this fool.
What fool's that?
This one, holding the sword, which is obviously too large for him.
Oh, no, Princess, you don't understand. Your father sent this fool.
Excuse me? This gentleman, Sir George, to find you.
Oh. Well, very well, but no one is going to harm this egg.
What kind of egg is that?
It's a dragon's egg. And its name is Smite.
May I touch it?
Rin, you stay put. I'm getting you out of here, and then I'm gonna destroy that thing.
You're not getting me anywhere. I was doing perfectly well until you showed up.
Really? Because you look very cold and extremely hungry to me.
I've got something for you. Rin, come and help me.
Shh, don't speak to me.
I wasn't planning on it.
If you came to kill a dragon, you came to the wrong place.
I came to find you. Where there's a baby, there is a mother.
Adelaide died.
Adelaide?
That's what I called her. She had a terrible wound. 2 days ago, she just crawled off into the lake and didn't come back. Smite may be the last dragon God ever creates, and I intend to protect him.
Oh.
Rin holds a flaming torch as he and Elm collect some clothes for the princess from a trunk outside the cave. She sits inside, chewing her nails next to the flickering fire, which casts an orange glow on her face. George, with his sword, leans against the cave wall some distance away. He steps towards her.
So, you are hungry.
Perhaps.
I might just have something for you.
He delves into a bag.
I'd eat anything.
He hands her licorice.
Ugh.
It's licorice. Garth told me.
Garth? He doesn't know the first thing about me. That's the worst substance I've ever eaten.
Very well put.
He tosses it away.
No, I bought some of your things from the campsite. There you are. And I've bought you a special piece of venison.
Oh, Elm. You always were so thoughtful.
Rin, thank you.
Now glancing at the sleeping George who lies on the floor, the princess gathers her new clothes and moves behind the giant egg. George's hand moves, his eyes flicker open. He turns his head and sees on the cave wall the shadow of Princess Luna undressing. George rests his head down again on the floor and looks thoughtful. Outside the cave, Elm sits on the ground next to another fire, staring into the distance. He feels George's hand on his shoulder.
Hey. Oof. You scared me. Sorry. It's going to be a long day tomorrow. You better get some rest, huh?
George helps the older man to his feet.
You know we can't let it live, don't you?
I don't suppose we...
No. I'll do the dirty work.
Elm walks away, looking uncertain. George squats down next to the fire. He takes off his gloves and warms his hands. It's morning now. George cleans his sword.
Tell me, Rin. Do you hope one day to be a hired killer like Sir George here?
I'd like to be a knight, if that's what you're asking.
Why?
Sounds like fun.
Nothing fun about killing, Rin. It's very dirty, deeply unpleasant, and not something I'd recommend to anyone at all.
What about you, George? Aren't you still in the business of killing?
I'd hardly call it a business.
My father must be paying you a fortune.
Well, if you can call an acre of land and 2 head of cattle a fortune, then yes.
How curious. A knight who doesn't seek fame, a mercenary who doesn't seek fortune. Why did you follow this path?
I had no choice. My path was set down for me before I was born.
And you don't have a choice now?
No, I have a duty. The duty of honor. To honor my father, to honor my oath. Perhaps that doesn't make much sense to a spoiled little princess. Most of us can't be quite as frivolous as we might like. And I suppose that too, for a girl like you, it's rather difficult to understand.
Then I don't suppose you understand me at all.
Wearing a fresh blue dress, Luna helps Elm clear rocks from the cave entrance.
Elm, are you sure we can't push the cart up the hill?
No, I'm afraid not. It's far too steep.
Then you must promise me to be very careful.
I promise. Should we clear a path in there?
George nods. He and Elm go into the cave. Elm clears some of the bones away. George stares in distaste at the dragon egg and glances outside the cave at Luna, who is still clearing rocks and stones away. George picks up his sword that's propped against the cave wall.
Oh, no. Not now.
I hope nothing happens to it. I've never seen a real dragon.
Luna freezes as her instinct tells her something is wrong.
No. Death! As the daughter of the king for the last time, I order you not to harm this egg. Ugh!
That's twice! I cannot believe you've done that again. Enough is enough. One day you'll thank me for this.
One day I'll hang you for this! I'm not leaving without Smite!
As George puts her over his shoulder, she hangs onto the cave wall.
The riders are coming!
I'm not leaving without him!
Oh, go long! Hang it off! All right. All right. But if that thing slows us down, I swear to you, you will be the only woman in England wearing dragonskin shoes. Understood?
Yeah.
She pats him and goes back into the cave.
Why me?
Now the three of them heave the massive egg out of the cave, gently revolving it. Elm becomes squashed beneath it, the weight pressing him into the ground. He waves an arm from under the egg. They use all their strength to lift the egg off Elm. George helps Elm to his feet again, but the egg rolls off down the slope. George leaps onto the egg as it gathers speed.
Lord.
George!
It rolls off again. George cushions the impact as it crashes into a tree.
I'm fine, thank you.
My little sweetheart.
Damn, you brought the egg right to the car.
Well, thank you, It would be nice if someone else noticed.
All right, we've got to get Smite into the cart.
The cart happens to be full of your dresses.
She marches to the cart and tips out all her clothes from a trunk. Then she tips the trunk from the cart.
Now it'll fit.
Suppose we better get the egg.
The egg is stacked onto straw on the cart.
Let's go.
Sitting at the front with Elm, Luna looks at herself in a vanity mirror. She turns to Rin, who sits on the back with the egg.
Rin, have you seen one of these? Wow. It's better than a bucket of water.
Torgal's about a day's ride from here.
They'll run us down long before then. Thanks to that, we're going slower than a snail's pace.
Maybe we should head towards the mountains.
Pack it in, Rin.
No, we have to stay near the lake in case it hatches.
And that might be soon.
The egg is pulsating. Even El Kabil mercenary picks up George's dragon horn in his gloved hand. Two other mercenaries eye him quizzically as he takes it outside, where other men are rifling through the clothes the princess dumped. The second in command sniffs the clothes.
Smells like a princess.
An interesting relic. Could be worth something.
The dragon horn.
I'll tell you when I sold it.
The second in command snatches it.
We go north!
The second-in-command glances at the El Kabil, who nods his consent. A full metal helmet covers his head and face with holes for his eyes. He leads his men onwards in armour and black cloak. On the forest track, George stops his horse. Elm halts the cart.
Mountain path. Lake path.
Which way?
We need to buy some time.
In another part of the forest, a mercenary brushes a hand over dead leaves looking for tracks. He shakes his head. The second in command rides up with the others.
We can't tell which way they went. Should we split up?
We have to. Take four men and... Wait. There.
In the distance, a mirror flashes.
Very clumsy. They make this too easy.
They ride onwards towards the mirror reflecting the sun. George and company are on a riverside track. The egg is covered by a blanket.
It's Hassan again.
He's not going to stay in there much longer, you know.
And this blanket isn't big enough.
Highness, I don't suppose we could use your, No, I don't suppose we could.
They pass two men who stare at the cart's cargo curiously. George tries to stretch the blanket. An advance party of mercenaries return.
What is this?
One holds the vanity mirror.
They took the lake road.
George, Elm and Rin wait with the cart outside a large convent by a lake as Luna fetches her cousin, the nun. They come outside linking arms.
I still can't believe you're actually here. What's this? You kidnapped the king!
She screams as she sees the egg. George covers her mouth.
Concentrate. Say rabbits and radishes, rabbits and radishes.
Rabbits and radishes.
It works. She's all right. Let her go. Ah!
I was trying to say that you're smothering me.
Sorry, sister. I couldn't risk you being hurt.
What is that?
Dear cousin, we have a small problem.
It's a big problem. It's a small dragon.
That's about to hatch. It's a dragon's egg.
She blesses herself.
Sister Angela?
Oh, my...
Is it you causing all this commotion? And who, may I ask, are your visitors?
Mother Margaret, this is my beloved cousin, the Princess Luna. Huh? And this...
Oh, my good Lord. Lord, what in heaven's name is that?
It's a dragon's egg, Mother Superior.
What? I mean, how is that possible? I thought they'd been extinct for hundreds of years.
Mother Margaret, it may be the last of its kind, and I feel compelled to take it to safety where it can be no harm to anyone.
And where may that be?
I understand her point, Mother, but I fear there is no such place. It is my belief that this egg should be destroyed.
I'm afraid I agree with you, sir. Sister Angela, your friends are very welcome here, but that creature, whatever it is... Well, certainly is not. See that it is dispatched as soon as possible.
Please, Mother Margaret, please don't.
It is for the best. Only God knows what havoc it will cause when it hatches. Now, sir.
Actually, I am of a different opinion.
Father Bernard.
I don't believe my eyes.
You know each other?
We did some boating together at one time.
Now, these are your friends, huh?
Mother Margaret and I met many, many, many years ago.
One many would have been quite sufficient.
And so, this is your path to peace and tranquility?
I got a little sidetracked.
Huh?
In fact, it would have been a good deal less dangerous if I'd gone after Al-Kabir with Tariq.
Mother Margaret? Something is not evil just because we don't understand it. Besides, the princess has a unique understanding of creation. I, for one, am going to listen to her.
But, Father...
And as someone else who has a big heart, I think you should listen to her as well.
Very well. On your own head, be it. But no one else... except for those of us here, can know about it. And it must be hidden in the stables till morning, and it must be gone by then.
It will be, I promise.
She hugs the Mother Superior.
Forgive me, Mother.
That's quite all right, child. Restraint is a virtue only thrust upon the elderly. May God be with you.
The skateboarding monk escorts the Mother Superior away.
Rin.
Sir, your poor tunic, it's ruined. I'll see if we can find something more appropriate for you when we get inside.
George nods.
He's a rather handsome escort, isn't he, cousin?
I don't know what you mean.
In a room with stone walls where candles burn, Luna, wearing a cloak, spots George in a nun's white tunic with a red cross on it.
What?
The tie of my dress.
Oh.
Would you just...
Yes, of course. Tuck it in here.
Mm. He adjusts the tie at the back of her neck. His hands linger. He quickly removes his hands when he sees lines of nuns sitting at long tables, all staring at them. The nuns' eyes follow them as they walk down the central aisle to the high table where the Mother Superior sits with Father Bernard and the new guest, Garth, who gets to his feet.
Princess Luna, they told me you'd arrive safely.
My lord.
My lord de Gurney, it's good to see you again.
George,
where did your adventures take you, huh?
Most likely on the same roads that you've traveled. Although I see you caught the prize.
It's really not important who found her, just that she's safe. Now we can take her back to her father together.
Aren't you forgetting something, George?
Hmm? Forgetting what?
Our little secret.
Oh, no. No, it's really not what you think. Could you excuse us while we had a word?
Do not let me interfere.
Thank you. A word.
He takes her out of earshot.
I'm not leaving without the egg.
What?
You think they're a married couple the way they're carrying on?
Her outspoken cousin sits between Garth and Elm. Later, Garth catches up with Luna.
Luna? Luna?
He takes her hand.
Oh. I am so relieved that you've returned to me safe and sound.
Are you relieved that I'm safe? Or are you relieved we can finally move forward with your plans?
That you're safe, of course.
Of course.
Why?
Don't you even wonder what happened to me? I had a lot of time to think while I was away, and I've come to a conclusion. I will not marry you.
You can't be serious. Your father promised me your hand.
I don't love you. I never did.
Luna, this is not only about love. This is about the solvency of our kingdom.
When I marry, it will be about love.
This is about him, isn't it?
I made my decision long before I met George. You just weren't listening.
She strides off along the corridor. In the stables, Elm adjusts a blanket covering a sleeping Rin. He perches on a barrel and warms his hands in front of a log fire next to George, who looks lost in thought.
When will they be weighed?
Luna and Gar. Soon, very soon.
George nods, not liking it.
George, there's something you must know. Since the Crusades, our kingdom has suffered a great deal. King Edgar felt the need for a strong successor. Someone who may not be as benevolent as he, but one who can unify our people. Garth is that man. And the king asked his daughter to marry him. She agreed, because unlike what you thought, she's not selfish or spoiled. And preserving this egg, well, it's the first thing she's ever done that she wasn't told to do.
Elm pats George on the shoulder and gets up. Later, Captain Darcy holds a flaming torch as he strides down into the depths of a cellar. His boss, Garth, is waiting for him.
It is about time.
Sorry, sir.
There has been a development that I had not counted on, so we must expedite my plan.
The troops are camped about half a day's ride from here. What can I do?
I need you to get the troops to Dunmead by mid-morning. I will meet you there with the priest. And when he's performed the ceremony, we can move on the old king. Now, I have some work to do here, so you will bring the men. And Darcy, do not be late.
Yes, sir.
Deus judicium tuum regida, et justitiam tuam filio. Regis ludicare populum tuam in justitia, et pauperes.
As the nuns finish their morning prayers, the sun streams through a tiny window in a sparse room where Luna sleeps on a bed. A gloved hand goes over her face, its garth.
Utter a word and it will be your last. Put these on.
Justitia tua sicut montes Dei. Judicia tua abyssus multa.
Sister Angela sees from a window Garth taking Luna away on a horse. Father Bernard is being pulled behind on a rope. Sister Angela rushes from prayers, knocking over another nun.
What in heaven?
She frees a door which traps George Elman Rin.
Princess Luna and Father Bernard. I think they were tied.
Where?
To the horse.
No, where did he take them?
Oh, the road to Dunmead.
Rin, get the horse.
I'll get the cart.
No, I'm not taking it. It'll slow us down.
I'm the servant of the princess. I vow to protect her.
You protect the egg. I'll rescue the princess.
Still wearing a nun's tunic marked with a red cross over his chainmail, George jumps on his horse and gallops away. A man carrying wooden poles steps out of the way as George races along a forest track. A river reflects the figures of the mercenary force led by Al-Kabil, also riding flat out. Elm speeds the horse-drawn cart along. Rin is in the back, steadying the egg. It's a bump and Rin rolls off. It races on with the egg swaying in the back. Rin is grabbed by a mercenary with horns on his helmet.
We take him with us.
No! No! Let me go!
He's bundled onto the second-in-command's horse. Holding Luna onto his horse, Garth approaches a castle with Father Bernard still in tow behind on foot.
Mind for our wedding, but since you would not cooperate, this is where it's going to be. Now move!
He pushes the priest and the princess through a heavy door into the keep as George gallops closer.
If she does not consent, I won't do it.
Oh, really?
Kill me if you want. I don't fear death. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today.
Garth points his sword to Luna's throat. George gallops.
Do you? Garth again?
I do.
Do you, Princess?
She does.
I swear you'll regret this. I don't love you. I don't even like you. I agreed to our engagement only to serve my father.
And a proud father he will be. He'll go to the grave, knowing his kingdom is in good hands. Once we are wed, I will be king, and you will be my queen.
George bursts in.
Well, George, just in time. We need a witness.
The only witnessing I'll be doing is your certain death. Unless you unhand her.
I'll not only unhand her, I'll unarm her, unleg her, and possibly behead her.
Unless you put down that sword.
Now, let's continue, priest. I've had enough of these rude interruptions.
Now Elm crashes through the doors of the keep on the cart. It overturns, spilling the egg.
Elm. The rider!
What?
The rider's there, not far behind me!
So Captain Darcy's arrived on time.
These aren't your men. They've been chasing us for days.
Who?
It's a bunch of very ugly-looking mercenaries, the kind that take no prisoners.
No. What kind of fool do you take me for? Do you think I'm stupid enough to believe that there's a group of mercenaries converging outside?
Why not? There's an egg the size of a cow at your feet.
Think about it. When have your men ever been on time? Huh?
They'll kill us all.
All right, come on then.
George flips his sword up from the ground with his foot and neatly grabs it as they all march outside. See the armored and helmeted El Kabil leading his troop of mercenaries towards the castle's raised portcullis. George and Garth go to their horses and pluck an extra sword from the sheath. The second in command of the mercenaries drops Rin from his horse.
Speak for the one who makes God tremble. Surrender the girl and live. Refuse and die. Start with the boy.
That is hardly a threat. Who cares if one more peasant boy dies?
She slugs him.
Princess? Up on the wall, father. You go with her.
They do it. He approaches the helmeted El Kabil.
So, you are the great El Kabil, huh? The terrorizer of sheep. And chickens.
Rin, go.
Rin runs past George to safety. Garth flexes his sword behind George. Father Bernard and Luna stare from a window in the castle wall. The El Kabil slowly approaches George, towering above him in his full metal helmet. He flicks George's forehead.
What are you doing in this dreadful place? Are you crazy? Risking your life for that skinny girl? She's got no meat in her bones. What'd I tell you about that? Back up.
The El Kabil points his sword at George's throat. George sees Elm about to fire an arrow.
No! Elm!
He's a friend.
The El Kabil hands George his sword and removes his helmet. It's Tarik.
And you thought you'd never see me again.
They hug.
You are El Kabil?
I became El Kabil.
How?
Come on, I'll show you. Fight me. Secure this arrangement. Huh? Whoever beats El Kabil, here comes the next El Kabil.
So you kill him?
Do you remember? Listen. Number five.
Five?
Yeah.
He got that far, did he?
This is a friend of yours?
The best. Tarik, this is Elmendorf and Rin. Oh, and this is the Princess Luna of Krayl.
Princess. Wait a minute.
And I am Lord de Gurney.
My lord.
Of all people, you showing up here.
I don't know why. When I heard of a knight who went to save a princess for an acre of land, two cows, I thought, who would be a fool enough to do that? I could only think of one person.
Please, let us dispense with the family reunion.
If those men out there are yours, then why are they still battle ready?
I have this situation under control.
He marches off.
Under control.
There's nothing here worth dying for.
You will turn to the south.
I think there is.
You defy me.
The men are ready for a new leader.
The second in command draws his sword, and so do the men. Tarik runs back to George.
Under control? You call that under control?
Now we'll see what you're made of. Let's get on with it.
The mercenaries charge. Garth fells one with his sword. George pulls another from his horse, and Tarik brings down a horse and rider. Other mercenaries rush under the portcullis to do battle on foot. Elm fires his bow. The arrow sticks in wood close to where Bernard is bending over. Rin grabs the bow. The boy's arrow brings down a horseman. From a platform on the castle wall, Bernard and Luna throw rocks at the mercenaries. One bounces off the helmet of the second in command, now the new leader, who confronts the priest. Bernard protects himself against the man's sword with a rock, but blood gushes as he's sliced in the stomach. Luna takes on the new leader with her sword. Elm grabs Rin as he tries to help. Rin pulls out Elm's dagger and wriggles free just as the leader overpowers Luna. Rin hacks through the rope, holding up the portcullis. It crashes down, trapping mercenaries, and Rin soars up, holding onto the rope. He swings over to the leader and grabs the dragon's horn from his belt. The leader loses his footing and crashes down. Rin leaps down the steps to where the priest lies.
Father! He's alive!
George rushes over.
Blood, this is burgundy.
A deflated leather flagon.
There's a big, big hole here.
Come on!
They help him to his feet. Quick! They dash into the castle as the mercenaries break through the portcullis.
Close the door!
They secure the door with a hefty plank of wood.
What in the name of Allah?
It's an egg. A very special egg.
It's under our protection.
Inside the castle keep, Terek stares in amazement at the egg.
Arrows!
The mercenaries fire flaming arrows into the keep, where the floor is straw-lined. They pound a battering ram against the door. Terek and Elm take opposite ends of a heavy table. As Terek lifts, Elm's feet leave the ground. With his shaved head glistening with sweat, Terek places the table against the door. As small fires flicker in the keep, the egg starts pulsating again.
Uh-oh.
The princess stares enraptured as the shell starts to break, oozing out a gooey green liquid. They all gather round as a slimy shape starts to poke out from the cracked shell. Luna looks on with a tender maternal expression. She smiles as the baby dragon thrusts its head upwards, sending the gooey green almost into her face. Outside, the mercenaries ram the door again. Luna touches the dragon's head. It nips her.
Already has its teeth.
What did I tell you?
A spray of vomit hits George.
Maybe it's allergic to you.
No, gently, just don't go near its mouth.
The mercenaries break down the door and pour in. George tosses a sword to Terek, and with Garth they go into fight mode again.
Fight!
Luna calls out to the baby dragon as it hops from the shell and stumbles.
Soldiers! Get there!
More soldiers arrive on horseback and join the fray. Inside the keep, Elm fights off a mercenary. Luna calls to the dragon. The dragon looks frightened.
Rin, blow the horn!
The mother dragon lies on a beach.
We make a good team, you and I.
We did!
We can again. Rule with me, George.
I'd rather eat licorice, thank you!
Then so be it.
That's so fast.
Terek clobbers Garth before he can bring his sword down on George.
Try again!
Rin blows the horn again. On the beach, the mother dragon opens her eyes and lifts her head in response. The baby dragon looks more alert and shows its teeth. It has its mother's green eyes.
It's working! Smite!
Outside in the castle courtyard, the confusing fight continues. The new leader is back in action. Inside, a mercenary lifts Luna over his shoulder. George rescues her.
What's wrong with you, Princess? All that.
Luna swings a club at two soldiers.
Meanwhile, just...
Yeah, right.
Terek slips through the steps he stands on as he tries to bring a sword down on Garth.
So sorry.
Terek goes all the way through the steps as George stands on his shoulder. A man leaps on him. George and Garth are having a vicious set-to with swords. Garth rams the handle of his weapon into George's back, sending him down. He rolls over, rises again, and gets Garth in an arm lock, sending him sprawling. Outside, the king's foot soldiers arrive with bayonets fixed, followed on horseback by the king himself in his crown and regal robes. Confusion reigns.
Hope my sword. Thank you.
The mercenary leader slugs Darcy and takes back the sword he handed him.
An innkeeper, I give you free ale for a year! Fresh wine in a Friday!
The king rescues the landlord of the village tavern as he's pinned down with a knife to his throat. Now Garth and George join forces again as they're challenged by the mercenary leader.
You are a very good team, aren't you?
While fighting the leader, Garth and George also thump each other. Sister Angela stands with Father Bernard. They nod to each other and then club two of the fighters. The nun whips off her headdress and clobbers somebody else.
He's not going down.
George and Garth have teamed up again against the mercenary leader. As everybody is fighting everybody, a sword is thrown at Elm. It penetrates his chest. Luna and Rin rush over.
My God, Elm! Wasn't meant to turn out like this. I'm tired. But knowing there's someone to watch over you makes this a little easier.
Rin pulls the sword out.
Rin, I can think of no one more worthy to take my place as guardian of the king's household.
He gives Rin his ring.
You'll grow into it.
He lolls his head and dies. Garth, George, and the mercenary leader are still fighting. A wall of the castle keep collapses. The mother dragon peers in. She's come for her boy. George, on a high balcony, leaps for a hanging curtain and clings on while it rips him towards a post, where he stops solidly and drops into the rubble. Outside, the conflict stops. Friend and foe stare up at the mighty dragon in awe, but Princess Luna stares lovingly. Tarik escorts Luna away. George is trapped by rubble. Those who can scramble to safety through flames now licking upwards in the castle keep. Luna falls into the arms of her father.
God. I'm sorry I've caused you so much worry. Where's George?
George is freeing himself.
George!
George!
They can't open the doors.
Something's falling against them.
Inside the keep, George watches edgily as the mother dragon nuzzles up to its baby. He sees a lance protruding from the side of the mother.
Lance. It was no fairy tale.
Looking bedraggled with the soiled Red Cross sign still on his chest, George squats down to search for his sword, never taking his eyes off the giant beast. He plucks his sword from the rubble and holds it threateningly, but then he sees it snapped. The dragon tosses its gnarled head, knocking over a support post. It breathes on George. He stands petrified, dropping the bit of the sword that he holds. The dragon's breath has created a moisture patch on his tunic. George touches it and smells his gloved hand. The monster has pulled back. George slowly edges closer to it. The dragon sways its head from side to side. George puts out the palms of his hands to show he means no harm. Outside, they ram the blocked door. Luna looks on anxiously. George stares at the lance protruding from the dragon's side. He takes hold of it for a few moments and then makes the sign of the cross. His face is grimy and his eyes are red and weary. He stretches back his head, fixing his eyes upwards.
Holy Father. Forgive me for what I am compelled to do. Come on, painless as possible.
He grips the lance again. Outside, where dust and smoke is swirling, they all stop what they're doing. George's father, Sir Robert, makes the sign of the cross. Luna sinks to her knees.
Please, George, you didn't.
Rin puts a hand on her shoulder. Tarik runs at the door of the keep and manages to force it open. There's a flash of a fire inside and smoke bellows from the door. George appears through the smoke with the lance in his hand. Some of the dragon's flesh is congealed at the pointed end of the lance. Luna stares at George in disbelief. He catches her eye and stares back uncertainly.
To George! The dragon slayer!
George, whose face is stained with the blood of the dragon, thrusts the lance into the air. Luna throws down the glove she has on with a look of disgust. Sister Angela is among those congratulating George.
You saved us all. You're truly a saint, George. God was on our side today.
I think Allah doesn't pick sides when men are killing each other, sister.
I believe that you're right, Tarik.
Rin looks down at Helm's ring.
He was a good man.
A very good man. But I don't think I'll ever be able to take his place. Such a big ring.
I'll stay with you until you grow into it.
You will?
I'll teach you everything I know.
He flicks the boy's forehead.
My lance!
Father.
Oh, after all these years.
Forgive me. I'm so sorry I ever doubted you, my boy.
His father hugs him. Luna angrily takes off her tunic. Rin hands George the dragon's horn.
Only you deserve to wear this now.
Thank you.
As George places the horn around his neck, he sees Luna leap onto a horse and ride off.
Luna!
The king sees his forlorn look.
Take my horse.
Good luck.
I think I may need it.
A guy tries on Tarik's helmet.
A perfect fit. I can do this.
He flicks a man on the forehead and gets thumped.
Be calm, young knight. This is a battle George must face alone.
Tarik reassures Rin as George gallops off after the princess. Another rider appears from a sidetrack in the forest, nearly knocking George from his horse. It's Garth, also galloping after the princess. Two rivals ride side by side as Luna gallops on ahead. She takes her horse into the lake. Garth and George follow, each trying to knock the other from their horse. George leaps onto Garth's horse and both men tumble into the water. They get to their feet and fight. Garth produces a knife.
There's something you should know about me, George.
I am not a good loser.
You were right to be afraid of me.
The dragon rises from the lake and gobbles up Garth. Luna gallops back through the water. George drags himself to the shore and collapses.
George! 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 George!
Ow! 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 Ow!
You didn't kill her! I can't believe you did that for me!
I did it because of you. Your absurd ideas. Your unique understanding of creation began to make sense to me.
With a tender expression, she places a hand on his face.
No one knows what a hero you really are.
No one could know about this.
The dragon watches from behind them.
People should find out that they're still alive. They'll stop at nothing to kill them. It must be a secret. A secret between them.
As the sun starts to set, the dragon and her baby swim away into the distance, splashing about playfully.
I
and us.
George and Princess Luna stare into each other's eyes. Their heads move closer and they kiss. She takes off her engagement ring and tosses it into the sun-drenched water. George takes the dragon horn from his neck.
What are you going to do with that?
No one must ever find this.
He swings it round and tosses it into the lake. He takes her hand and they walk away.
George?
Mm-hmm.
I heard there was a unicorn just near Blastoise.
No. No unicorns, no sea monsters, and certainly no more dragons.
We could just check on it. It's on the way.
Get your horse.
Silhouetted against the lake, they kiss again. Their image morphs into a storybook of legends. The end.